sing if you're ready to care.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, Way Too Deep. We are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. As always, thank you all who are tuning in. If you're on YouTube, like, share, subscribe, leave a comment in the comment section, and leave us a thumbs up if you enjoy this episode. If you're on audio, like, share, leave a rating, and all of that fun jazz that we go through every single episode, right? I don't know if you saw that. If you're watching the YouTube, we finally got a piece of the merchandise that I ordered like 3 months ago. The Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast mug. You know what goes, but you know, I'm not a coffee drinker. There's water in this right now. I'm not a coffee drinker. But what a better way to represent the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast than with to start your morning with the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast mug, slappingmewrestling.com. Hopefully, when you order, it doesn't take 6 months to get your said mug. I'm still awaiting the two shirts that I ordered so I could show you what those look like in person. And I have zero idea when they show up. It's going to be, you know, a surprise to me when they pop up in the mail. But anyway, slappingmeatwrestling.com is where you can get your merchandise. All right, let's start talking wrestling. So let's open up the show with a couple opening thoughts, both of which center around AEW. And we'll start with the least important, in my opinion, and that is Britt Baker is rumored by Jonathan Coachman. That's the source. He said on a podcast that Britt Baker is reportedly going to sign with WWE at some point when her contract is over. Which is an interesting thing for him to say. I don't think this is like surprising by any means. I think we all kind of expected that this would happen. There's been some fallout over the last couple months between Britt and Tony Khan, from what I understand, in the back in that whole situation. I'm happy for Britt if she does choose WWE. The issue that I have, right, my main issue with all of these women's wrestlers coming at this moment to WWE, the one issue that I'm going to have is there's not enough room for all of them, right? She could definitely come into NXT and play, you know, 1A, 1B with Brooke Monroe. I just, there's no room for her on the main roster. And so NXT is where she's going to definitely be. While she, you know, learns the system and all of that. I think she lives in Florida anyway. She does her dentistry stuff. If all she does is NXT and then does the dentistry on the side, maybe that's part of the deal. You know, I'm not exactly certain how that works, what that contract would look like. I don't necessarily have an opinion on if this is a good or a bad thing. I don't think this is as surprising as some people are acting about this situation. where I will add this in is Britt being like the original AEW woman. You have to ask the question. She was like for the longest time, like the top dog. Like she was the Charlotte Flair. Anytime Britt was on TV, she was in the title picture. You have to ask yourself what happened, right? Tony found new toys. Mercedes gets introduced to the locker room. What happened in this relationship to where Tony Khan didn't find Britt Baker valuable to AEW's locker room, right? She comes in, she immediately brings eyes on the program. Not only is she good looking, she's really good on the microphone. She's decent on in with the X's and O's in the ring. She can put on pretty decent matches. I don't know what, you know, what AEW don't, what they don't see in Britt Baker to keep her off of TV and not to to make her a major part of the story in the company at all. It's kind of insane to me. But this isn't necessarily going to be one of those like news stories that I find is like absolutely groundbreaking. I kind of figured this would happen at some point. It wouldn't surprise me if within the next year or so, again, I don't know what contracts look like. If Britt joins, if Jamie joins WWE, Jamie Hayter, you know, Abaddon's a free agent. Maybe she gets introduced in some way, shape or form. You know, there's even rumors that Athena, you know, could be coming back. Probably if he goes back to WWE to be Ember Moon again, which would be interesting. All that there's a interest in, especially in women's wrestling, for the top dogs to come back and join WWE women's division. But the second thing, the main thing that I really wanted to open this with was this major news story in the wrestling world that has happened and it's got people trying to pick sides, and AEW is being sued. And I'm going to try to sort of fill everybody in on the facts that I know and then sort of tell you how I feel about this situation, right? So let's talk about the John Moxley AEW civil lawsuit. Okay. It was filed by Christopher Dispenza, I believe is how you say his name, who was a guy who has worked behind the scenes in wrestling for a couple of years. This guy, Dispenza, claims that John Moxley shoved him during a May 2023 cage match with Kenny Omega, which then forced Dispenza to take a hard fall that messed up his neck and shoulder, where he ended up needing spinal surgery. Right? Again, this isn't some sort of story. This is like a real thing, right? So here's the thing. Right. That's sort of the facts that we know, right? Dispenza was a contractor who didn't work for AEW, but was, you know, doing contract work for AEW. He was not supposed to be part of any match. John Moxley goes into business for himself, trying to sort of like on the fly, pushes the cameraman, causing the cameraman to be hurt, need surgery, and then eventually he no longer does work for AEW, and now there is a lawsuit at play. So here's the thing, right? If this was like an unfortunate accident, those happen all the time, right? When you're in live events, we see it in like the NFL or stuff like that where cameramen get trucked over all the time, right? Just as accidents, right? If this was some sort of unfortunate accident, that's one thing. I don't think Dispenza has a case, right? Because wrestling's chaotic. Things spill out of the ring. People get bumped, right? But this man, Mr. Dispenza, was not a trained performer, right? He wasn't someone who would be trained, even on the fly or as an accident, to take a bump this way, right? He was a production guy. He was a contractor, a camera op. And from everything we know so far, he wasn't in on the spot. He didn't know. He wasn't a part of the planning of, hey, Moxley's going to push you, right? Like, he wasn't in any case, shape, or form supposed to be touched, right? Like, Moxley shouldn't have touched him, period. And that's sort of where my standpoint comes in, right? John Moxley is a trained professional wrestler, right? He wasn't born yesterday. He didn't start wrestling yesterday. He should know not to touch the camera guys, right? If you wanted someone who is a camera guy or seemingly part of the production team to make it feel like Moxley was going rogue as part of the story, that would be a cool thing to do. Absolutely, right? But use the trained performer. How many times do you put, you know, you fake out a cameraman in the ring and it turns out to be someone who, like, you know, like Randy Orton, who hits an RKO out of nowhere, right? You can disguise a trained, you don't even have to use a trained AEW wrestler, but use a trained performer or a wrestler who's taken bumps before, who would be in on the production side of this, right? You don't shove the guy who's been crouching ringside all night trying to make your product look good on TV, who has never taken bumps before, who has zero idea what he's doing outside of holding the camera. That's just stupid. It's reckless. And honestly, in my opinion, it's just plainly disrespectful, right? To the people on the production side of the television program, right? Their entire job is to make you, John Moxley, look good. There should be no reason why you would ever lay your hands on a production member, right? It just doesn't make any sense why you would do that. Again, if it was supposed to be part of the storyline, use a trained wrestler. See, but here's the thing. I at the end of the day, to be fair, just like I do with everybody who makes stupid mistakes, whether it's AEW or WWE, I'm not just going to blame John Moxley. I'm going straight to the top. Because, again, this is a Tony Khan problem. Let's be real. He's the one booking the show. Now, there were rumors that came out several months ago that the AEW doesn't do production meetings. This would lean towards the idea that maybe there's a little bit of truth to that. That Tony Khan just gives out and tells people, do whatever you want to do. And he has zero idea what's going to happen on his own programming. He's the one given creative freedom. He's the one that lets things slide because in his mind, it's all in the name of art, energy, and chaos. But here's the thing. Chaos without control, without barriers, is negligence, right? It's not just about spot. Wrestling isn't just about spots and pops, right? It's, at the end of the day, it's still a workplace. There are people behind cameras, under the ring, that mess and hold the lights up, set up the pyro, lays down the cable, and they have a right to feel safe doing their job. If your world champion wants to do something physical with someone outside of the ring, that should be, there should be a process of training, rehearsing, and getting this spot cleared before you do it. And if John Moxley went rogue and said, I'm just going to do this spot, yes, that's a Moxley issue, but at the end of the day, he feels he can do that because Tony Khan has never disciplined anyone for doing something that may not have been part of the plan. right? You got this dude where you got this Benza. He's out of work. He's recovering from surgery. And now you have AEW, this company that's the second biggest wrestling company to ever exist. They're being sued for negligence, civil battery, and assault. Right? And there's supposedly, you know, evidence of previous, like, disciplinary issues with Moxley, but the sources inside of AEW say, oh, no, he's a locker room leader. We've never heard of these issues. Right? I don't really care if there are previous issues. I want to really talk about this issue because this issue was reckless. Moxley had no reason to put his hands on the cameraman. Right? But this isn't... this isn't about one shove. Because this is a pattern of just mess-ups that leave a bad image for AEW, right? This isn't about just one shove. You've got exploding rings that don't actually explode. You got glass spots going that go sideways. You have untrained bumps from ladders and tables and God knows what else, and coffin drops and Matt Hardy getting a concussion and no one stopping the fight. And now you got non-wrestling crew members getting injured while the fans continue to yell fight forever. But you can't just yell fight forever when your staff and the people working for you are literally getting broken. There's this sort of romanticized image of AEW as the Wild West of pro wrestling, a place where the true artists get to create. And listen, I respect the idea that, you know, Vince McMahon was a little bit too micromanagey with this product. And I respect AEW for coming in and saying, we're going to give our talent the ability to create art. But you have to set boundaries. With this freedom comes responsibility. And when there's no one enforcing a structure and there's no accountability or boundaries, sooner or later, someone was going to get hurt. And unfortunately, in May of 2023, someone did. It just happened to be that the person who got hurt was not a wrestler. He was an untrained cameraman who didn't even work for the company. He was a contractor. So yeah, no matter how this plays out in court, whether AEW settles, whether they don't settle and they go to court, whether AEW wins or loses the case, this is bad for AEW. Again, no matter how the lawsuit ends. Because now the curtain's going to get pulled back. People are going to ask questions about safety, about training, about whether the company knows how to run a professional production. And I hope this wakes Tony Khan up. Right? Because if this goes to court, right, if Tony doesn't settle and this goes to court and the Spinza and his lawyers get the opportunity to do, like, you know, investigating into the company and go through the process of discovery where Tony Khan's books have to be paid back. Who knows how much of this company's financial history and disciplinary history and behind the scenes stuff, who knows how much of that is going to be exposed if this goes to the discovery phase. But I hope this makes Tony Khan realize that this isn't just about being an alternative to WWE. You still have to be a safe and sustainable company that protects everyone involved in making the show run, not just the superstars. Right? At the end of the day, I'm not Team Moxley because he made a mistake. I'm not really Team Dispenza because there's an argument, and some people in the Discord have sort of stated this argument that, well, the thing happened in 2023. He stopped working for them in 2024, and the lawsuit came out in 2025. Why did it take so long, right? And I can hear, I understand that question. I do. I understand that question. I'm not really interested in answering the question because I don't necessarily think it's a fair question, in my opinion. I just, the question of why did he take so long to file a lawsuit, I don't think it's a fair question because I don't know the timeline of when he had surgeries and stuff. And like, so if you ask the question, excuse me, if you ask the question, like, why did he take so long to file? Like, to me, there's nothing really unusual about that at all. Like, lawsuits take time, right? This wasn't just a slip and fall where you could run to the courthouse the next day. This guy had serious injuries. We're talking neck injuries, or neck surgery, shoulder surgery, rehab, recovery. That alone can take months, even a year or more. Especially if he was hoping, if he was trying to get this done quietly, or hope the company would take care of it without going legal. Second, a lot of people don't want to sue right away, right? It's a stressful process. It's expensive. It burns bridges. People often wait to see if their injuries get better, if the company would offer help or compensation. Right. In Dispenza's case, he wasn't even a full employee of AEW. He worked through a contractor. That alone can make the legal options super complicated. Right. I'm sure he had to find evidence. He needed a timeline. He needed a legal team. He needed to find evidence. This doesn't just happen with a snap of the finger. Right. The statute of limitations in most states is 2 to 3 years, meaning you have 2 to 3 years to file a civil claim for personal injury. He filed within that window, and you have such a long period of time, again, because the legal system understands you have to have the evidence and find a legal team, and this stuff doesn't just happen overnight, and they know that. And so the law even gives more time than what many people may assume is necessary. And so I don't see anything weird. A lot of people were like, oh, it's kind of weird that he waited, and this may be a money play. And I don't think that's what this is. I think he needed to find evidence. And I will say this. I'm pro cameraman. If I had to pick a side, I'd be pro cameraman, right? Again, because this, some people, I just, or now listen to me and don't get offended when I say this. When I say this, I'm not trying to be negative. Right. Some people are just ignorant to how the legal system works. That's not a bad thing. I'm ignorant to how the legal system works in most cases. But I do understand in like personal injury cases, you really have, especially when you go up against big corporations, you have to make sure you have evidence. Right. If you're especially when you go to civil court where you're not really going to be seen in front of a jury. It's just going to be the judge, and the judge is going to look for evidence. He's going to want evidence in front of him. Like, you don't go through the legal process right away. You have to make sure, you have everything you need to prove to the one person who's going to rule in your case, which is the judge. You don't have a 12-person or whatever amount of person jury that's going to make this pitch because it's a civil claim. And then also, most people don't want to sue, right? I'm going to assume that the Spinza probably thought that AEW may offer him some sort of compensation for his injuries without having to go the legal route. And when that didn't happen, then he did choose to go the legal route. And so I don't see an issue with him waiting a year and a half or 2 years to file the lawsuit, right? And so that's where I'm at on this situation, right? All right. So those are our opening thoughts. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw. What do we talk about Monday? Well, first off, I thought the start of Monday Night Raw was pretty bad. I'm just going to be honest with you. I thought it was pretty bad. To the point to where all I wrote in my notes was poor start, but I don't even write what the segment was. So let me find out what happened on Monday Night Raw. You know, the last couple weeks I've been saying Raw has been pretty bad, and I've gotten, you know, Highlander in the Discord. All respect to him, he has every right to have the opinion he has. He's been saying, "Man, you're a little bit crazy with that talk." And then when I got him saying Raw is boring, Raw was boring, right? it started with Liv. That's right. It was a Liv Morgan segment. She comes out, talks about her confrontation with Nikki Bella. She gets interrupted by Io Sky. So what we have with Liv Morgan, and we'll talk more about Liv a little bit later in the night. But what they are doing with Liv Morgan, at least at this point of the night, right? If I know a lot of you have already watched Raw, so when I'm talking about it, let's act like we don't know what's going to happen later in the night, right? At this point in the night, my question that I had was, okay, you have Liv in a story with Nikki. Now you're going to get her in a story with Io. You have this sort of drama backstage with her and Roxanne. Why is Liv Morgan in three stories? Is my question that I had at this point in time. It didn't seem to make much sense. Yeah, it just didn't seem to make much sense to me why Liv was in so many stories at this point. I thought this was a bad promo from everyone around. I was confused. I didn't really know what was happening. I don't understand why Liv had to be in so many different pieces of the show, right? And my concern was, if something happened to Liv Morgan, here's an Easter egg. My concern at the time was, okay, she's in three stories. If something happens to her, three stories go down the drain. Easter egg will save that thought. Well, we then move on to the main thing that I wanted to watch, which was the women's qualifier between Stephanie Vaquer, the return of Asuka, and Ivy Nile and Raquel Rodriguez. Where, as we assumed, Asuka did win the match, as we thought would happen. Congratulations to Asuka. I don't necessarily care about Asuka's return. I know there's some people who do. I think this ultimately, I do think Asuka's winning the Queen of the Ring. I do. I think we're going to get Asuka versus Io at SummerSlam, especially with the reports that Damage Control is essentially over with, you know, with Dakota Kai being released. And so I do think we'll get Io versus Asuka at SummerSlam. The next thing is we go to like a backstage segment with the Judgment Day. And I'm just so over the Judgment Day, guys. This same old week after week, conversation in the in their little playhouse between Finn and Dom and who's taking the control and all this bullshit. And it's not interesting and it's not unique anymore. And it's the same old, same old. They just need to pull the trigger and break the damn group up is where I'm at with this. Right. The next big thing that I made notes of was the Gunther segment, right? This is the Gunther segment. And so I started this night confused, right? So Gunther comes in and I'm happy that he's champion, but I have a legitimate question, right? A legitimate question with how rematch clauses work in WWE. Right. Rhea Ripley lost her title. She got a rematch clause. Io Sky lost her title. She got a rematch clause. Liv Morgan loses a title. She's calling for a rematch of a title that she hadn't had since January 1st. But she's calling to use a rematch clause. Gunther gets a rematch clause, losing the title at WrestleMania. But Jey Uso doesn't seem to apparently get a rematch clause. He gets put in the King of the Ring where he has to earn his way back to the championship. Why are we so inconsistent with rematch clauses? Either everyone gets a rematch or nobody should get a rematch. And that's why I'm, you know, I made a big deal about it with Rhea and Io and all of them because it made no sense. Why Rhea would get a rematch clause. But not everyone gets the rematch clause, right? I don't personally believe in rematch clauses, in my opinion. We knew where this was headed going into this, and so let's go ahead and just rip the Band-Aid off. Goldberg comes out. Gunther calls out Seth Rollins, instead he gets Goldberg. Goldberg says, Gunther, you're next. I'll see you in Atlanta, essentially is what he said. You started this in Atlanta at Bad Blood. I'm going to finish it in Atlanta at Saturday Night Main Event. And the match is confirmed. I have to double check to make sure. I'm assuming it is for the title. Guys, I'm telling you right now, if Goldberg puts any offense in this match whatsoever, I'm going to fucking scream. This needs to be a 2-minute squash match where Gunther looks powerful over Goldberg. There should be nothing else that happens in this match. Now, I know that's not what's going to happen, right? I titled this episode, WWE Digs Up Another Fossil, and that's Goldberg. Here's my question. Why does WWE insist, and why does wrestling insist, AEW does it as well, with digging up fossils from the past? Why can't we just build new superstars? Why does Nikki Bella need to come back? Why do fans want to see at Evolution all the female stars from the past? No, you got a present female roster of all-time greats on your roster right now. Between Rhea and Stephanie and Julia and Sol Ruka and Jada Parker and Roxanne and Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Bayley, Lyra Valkyria. You have future greats in your company that you could celebrate. But instead, we're going to probably bring back more than just Nikki Bella. Brie Bella's in talks. I'm sure Trish Stratus is probably in talks. I'm sure Natalia is going to get a match for no reason at this pay-per-view. Why do we have to build around nostalgia acts instead of building the future of the business? And that comes also into Goldberg. Why does Gold, like, I understand Cena and Cena's doing a retirement tour, but the top, the guys at the top of your card right now, when we get the Saturday night's main event, You're probably going to have a John Cena match where he's currently in a feud with R-Truth. Next in line's probably someone like LA Knight or Randy Orton or whoever wins King of the Ring, which would be at, you know, SummerSlam, where you got two 40-year-olds battling for that title. You have Gunther, who's getting close to 40, fighting a fossil known as Bill Goldberg, while the rest of that division, you know, you got the Jey Uso, who's approaching 40. You don't have any young. You got Seth Rollins in the holding that briefcase. Why are we depending so much on older talent and not building the company around the great future athletes? Like, you have great young talent on this roster right now that could absolutely excel in these top spots. Bron Breakker should be the main focus of this group. Right? That tells me that this is less Evolution and more, you know, Bloodline, but instead of all Samoans, it's Seth Rollins and his ragtag group of friends, right? Goldberg does nothing for me. And if he gets more than two moves of offense in this match, and he comes anywhere close to winning the World Heavyweight Championship, I'm going to crash out. Just be prepared for that to happen. One of the next segments after that, Bayley and Becky do a promo, which might be the worst promo of the year, which is a shame because they're both really good superstars and should be better than the performance they gave last night. I do think they're miscast. I've never taken heel Becky seriously because, first off, she screams and screeches like Gollum, my precious! And it's actually more hilarious. Like, why are you yelling at me? Calm down. Right? And Bayley's just not believable anymore as a babyface. You know, Lyra gets added to this in a backstage segment after this promo. But this is just a bad promo, right? Liv Morgan is in a match with the pirate princess no one asked for named Kairi Sane. DJ Wavy D in the Discord said, man, I fell asleep during the match. And my response was, you didn't miss much. It wasn't much of a match. It was like 30 seconds. Liv Morgan got hurt. And, you know, I'm going to take this time in the Discord. I made a comment where someone said, oh, Liv looks legit hurt. And I responded to it and I said, good. Right. And I'll just be honest, like, that's completely in jest. I hope people took that as a joke, not as me wishing Liv Morgan to be hurt. I think this is a good thing for everyone in the situation, though, right? I think it's great for the fans. I don't know about you, but in the same vein that I have Rhea Ripley exhaustion, like there's the fatigue of seeing Rhea on the screen, I'm very fatigued with seeing Liv Morgan on the screen. She's everywhere for no reason at all. This injury is a blessing in that gives her an opportunity to disappear from television and come back with a super baby face pop. You know, you could run the Dom cheats on her with Roxanne gimmick if you want to. Have Liv come back as a super baby face. Roxanne and Dom as a team would be pretty funny, pretty great. You could then run like Finn and Liv, possibly, if you wanted to. Where that leaves JD, I have no idea. Where that leaves Raquel, also no idea. But Liv being hurt, again, it sucks. No one actually wants to see a competitor get hurt. I'm excited that she won't be on TV. I'm not excited that she's hurt, but I'm excited that this gives an opportunity for other stars to take their place on the show. And then the last thing on Monday Night Raw is Jey Uso moves on in the King of the Ring, which everyone should have saw coming. I don't understand why you put Jey Uso in this match. It really just, why hype up an extra spot Why even hype that up for basically a week and a half? That, oh, we're going to have this bonus mystery guy, and then tell us, you know, a few days before the event, Adam Pearce says, oh, I saved that spot for the loser of Gunther Jey Uso. Well, why not just be honest with us about that from the be up front and say, hey, there's three men in this match, the loser of the main event. You say this last week when the main event was Jey and Gunther, and have the narrative being the loser of this match gets the last spot in King of the Ring where they can earn a spot to get the title back, right? Why make it sound like you're doing something unique and new and or re-debuting someone? It just makes no sense, right? Jey being in this tournament makes no sense. I still believe the King of the Ring should be a mid-card tournament. That's personally my belief. But that's that. All right. Now to the segment I never get prepared for ahead of the time. I just click record before I even think about doing anything with this, and that is bracket battles. So last week's matchups, let's pull that up. Last week's battles in the bracket championship. We have Chris Benoit's whatever defeating Crank It Up by Big Show, with Benoit getting 7 of 7 votes. 100% of the votes go to Benoit. We got I'm Coming MVP beating Are You Ready by DX. So far, I'm 2 for 2. We got Sting's Seek and Destroy with 5 votes over All About the Boom with 2 votes. That's Adam Cole. And where I'm very, very, very disappointed, and I'm not that disappointed because I like Slow Chemical, which is Kane, but who's that jumping out the sky? R-E-Y, Mysterio, Here We Go, right? That's one of my favorite theme songs of all time. It was a 4-3 vote, so it was really, really close. And so Kane is moving on. But those matchups, we'll see them again next week. This week's matchups, as we are in the quarterfinals, we are down to the final, basically 16, but final 8. So there's essentially 2 brackets that I'm running, and I'm going to post the updated brackets in the Discord page if you want to see them. We are down to the final, essentially 16 themes. We're halfway through this tournament, or just over halfway through the tournament. Yeah, because we did 32, I believe, or something like that. Or no, we did 48. So we're well beyond. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know how many numbers we have left. It is what it is. We're about halfway done with the tournament. Anyway, this week's matchups, we have Chris Jericho's Break the Walls Down taking on Drew McIntyre, Broken Dreams. Next bracket battle, next competition, we have Chris Jericho, Judas, taking on CM Punk, Cult of Personality. Next, we have Cody Rhodes, Kingdom, taking on Roman Reigns, Head of the Table. And the last matchup for this week, Randy Orton, Voices versus Mark Henry. Somebody gonna get their ass kicked. Who moves on to the next round? Those are the 4. If you want to vote, join the Discord. Link is in the description. If that link, for whatever reason, does not work, comment on the video or on the podcast, or find me on Discord. Username We2Deep, I believe, is my username that you can search and find me. Let me verify that. I lied. When you go in there, search it's RB_SMWP. And that is my username. To find me on Discord, you can send me a message there and I'll personally, send you a link to join, to vote in those matchups. With that, that's an easy segment, to go over, because there's not much to go over. We will move on to the questions at the Discord, and we mainly got two questions. I guess we can call them three. They're basically two different topics, though. So we got a topic from Kara, we got a topic from B-Master, and I appreciate both of these topics. So we'll start with Kara's questions. And her topic basically is Karrion Kross, and I absolutely love these questions. So what were the key turning points in Karrion Kross's main roster run that derailed his momentum? I'm going to read all their questions at one time, right? So what was the key turning point in Karrion Kross's main roster run that derailed his momentum? Does WWE have a clear vision for Karrion Kross, or is he being used as a jobber? And why can't WWE capitalize on Karrion Kross's NXT dominance on the main roster? And I think all of these can be answered pretty simply with the words Vince McMahon. Where did Karrion Kross fail? Was the booking. First off, let's go back to what I always say. 90% of wrestling is booking. Karrion Kross's booking is ass and has been since he's been on the main roster. And a lot of that is because Vince McMahon, I truly believe Vince McMahon did not want NXT superstars to do anything because he didn't have a hand in that creative. And so you get someone like Karrion Kross who dominated at NXT and was super over. Everyone loved him. And even before he got there, when he was on the Indies and in TNA and, you know, as Killer Kross or in Lucha Underground as the White Rabbit, he was over. Everything I heard about this dude was he was great on the mic. He was a good wrestler. A lot of positives being said about Karrion Kross. So he goes to the main roster. They change his presentation. They don't give him Scarlet. They put a mask on him. They just absolutely make him look like a buffoon. He then gets released. Triple H then brings him back. He brings back Scarlet in that presentation, but there's just he's losing matches or he's not wrestling, and he's playing this sort of like TikTok gimmick, and everything's backstage, and there's just no reason to actually treat him seriously. Killer Kross. Karrion Kross should have been in Money in the Bank. He should be in the King of the Ring tournament. He should be winning matches on a week-to-week basis. Because this dude is absolutely one of the greatest assets to your roster. Now, part of the reason I don't believe they're doing anything with him now is I don't believe he has any intention of coming back to WWE, or maybe they don't have any intention of bringing him back. I don't know which one is the truth. I don't think we see Karrion Kross much longer in WWE, and so creative is just not going to do anything with him. Even though he's number three in the merch on most weeks, if not higher, and he's one of the most over superstars. I mean, if you can go on Main Event and get a visible pop, Main Event is taped before Raw starts. So if you could get a pop while everyone's piling into their seats, getting their food, you know, 30 minutes before Raw starts, you're over. Why they're not doing anything with him is absolutely insane to me. And so I hope that answers all of your questions, Kara, because it basically falls down into one category. Vince McMahon didn't want him to get over. And why Triple H brought him back was no plan to actually get him over. I asked that question about Dakota Kai as well. Why waste their time if there's no long-term plan to bring them back, right, and do anything with them? B-Master's topic is AAA, essentially, right? So he says, with this partnership with TNA and AAA, we're seeing something that has never been done before, and that is WWE superstars winning gold in these other companies. And what he's referring to is Trick Williams. Whoop that Trick. One of these days, we're going to get Highlander from the Discord on that Whoop That Trick team with me and Kara. Whoop that Trick, right? He's talking about Trick Williams winning the TNA championship. He's talking about Los Garzas, Angel, and Berto winning the AAA Tag Team Champions this past Sunday at Triple Mania. That's what he's referring to there. So basically, his question is, do you think that other superstars from the other companies will ever win WWE gold? And I'm going to be pretty frank with you. No, that will never happen. Maybe in NXT, I can see a world where, like, the NXT champion switches hands. I don't think anything happens with the main roster ever. And let me tell you why. Let me tell you why and how these partnerships work, right? TNA and AAA, first off, AAA is now owned by WWE. They are the one of their lesser brands in the portfolio. Meaning WWE is not going to make their big stars lose to these practically unknown wrestlers, right? TNA and AAA need WWE. That's how the relationship works. WWE doesn't need TNA. WWE doesn't need AAA. The opposite is true, though. TNA needs WWE. AAA needs WWE. The only time I think we could see someone is like if Mr. Iguana wins, you know, or signs with WWE, then I could see him maybe winning one of the little crazy or mid-card titles or something or something silly. But I don't think a non-WWE employed wrestler will ever win a WWE championship. Because that there is no benefit to that happening. You know, having someone on TNA win the United States Championship does no benefit for anybody. For the most part, the reason you put Trick Williams as TNA champion is to get the Trick Williams fans to watch TNA and buy tickets to what I'm assuming will be Slammiversary was sort of the main goal. There is no reason to have, you know, Moose come in and win a WWE championship, branded championship. Because there's no reason for that to happen, right? And then secondly, he said, I want you to do some research before you answer. So I did do research. He says, will we get any more AAA wrestlers on WWE? And so what I did was I went to SmackDown Hotel, thesmackdownhotel.com, and pulled up AAA's roster as of today. And the problem with this is that it pulls up everyone who's ever wrestled for them. So I don't know if these are actual guys signed to AAA. Everyone that I've looked at seems to have been. And while I'm looking through the roster, we've gotten Aerostar, we've gotten Cheek Tormenta, gotten Dalis, we've gotten Wagner Jr., we've gotten Vikingo, we got Laredo Kid, we've gotten Octagon, Pagano, Mr. Iguana, Psycho Clown, right? So we've gotten a majority of the roster already on the card or on WWE. Maybe the rest of the Psycho Clowns, you know, you got Dave the Clown, and you got Panic Clown that I think you could show up if you wanted to. I don't necessarily think that'll happen though. People that I want to see. I want to see Extreme Tiger. If anyone ever watched Impact around 2014-ish through 2014 to 2016 TNA, you would have known him as Tigre Uno. In TNA, Tiger Mask was his name in the 90s. Ultimate Tiger he went by as well in different indie promotions. He's wrestled for NOAH, MLW, AAA. And so I would like to see him. Tigre Uno in Impact was a really good wrestler. He's up there in age, though. He's like 44. They have a guy here, Nino Hamburguesa. I think he's a little bit more of like a comedy act. He's a big dude. I would like to see him just because that looks like it'd be fun, but I don't think anything real serious happens. They have a guy named El Masiasis. I think it's how you say his name. You may know him as Mil Muertes from WWE, ECW, I believe, early days. TNA, ECW, WWF, right? He's still wrestling. Maybe have him show up. The one person that I'm 100% certain that I want to see, though, is a female wrestler that goes by the name, I think it's Lady Flammer. Or Flammer. I don't know how to pronounce it. Flammer. She's like 25. She's been wrestling since she was like 11 years old in Mexico. I lied. She was 8 doing exhibitions, and then at 11 she started pro wrestling. I've heard really, really great things about her. And so she's probably one of the ones I would like to see. They got a guy here, Dinamico. I think it's how you pronounce his name, that, he's wrestled for Impact and MLW in the past. So maybe we get something like that. Who knows? I don't necessarily think the goal is to bring the AAA superstars into WWE. I think the original goal of Worlds Collide was to get the WWE audience used to some of the bigger names and figure out which ones are going to be over, so that when Jeremy Borash takes over creative, as this is becoming a WWE product, they know how to book and for their style, right? And so I think Berto and the Garzas win the tag titles because that gives them something to do there. You know, with TNA, Trick winning that, again, it puts eyes on the show. And so I just don't necessarily see any reason to bring anybody else over outside of the few that I mentioned. Definitely Lady Flammer, though. I would love to see her in a WWE ring. Everything I've heard about her has been very great, right? And then we'll end with our final thoughts today. Bye. Playing a little game known as hot take or bad take. And so here's how this is going to play. I've listened to a couple different podcasts and opinions be thrown around the internet the last couple weeks, namely last week. Within the last couple days, And I'm going to share some of the takes that I've heard. And I'm going to tell you if this is a hot take. I think hot takes are cool. They may be a little controversial, but there are some takes that are controversial that I agree with. I'm going to tell you if I think it's a hot take or just a bad take. And so the first one is, I've heard this over the last couple days, is that we didn't want our truth to come back as anything but our truth. Ron Killings isn't going to work. What made our truth over was the comedy gimmick. And we're going to slap this with, that's a bad take. That's a really atrocious take. Ron Killings, first off, is the gimmick's going to work because the guy behind the gimmick always gets his gimmicks over. But secondly, I don't know who this person is talking about. I was tired of the comedy gimmick and immediately became more interested in Ron Killings than I have been in R-Truth in the last few years. I'm very interested in Ron Killings. I think this gives him a freshness that we needed, a seriousness that was needed in his gimmick that can definitely come around full circle if he ever wins the title. I don't think he will, but I think that striving of I'm calling the shots now, I'm driving, I'm Ron Killings, you don't tell me what to do, I'm not performing for you, I'm performing for me, right? Ron Killings is going to work. Saying that it's a bad take, saying that is not going to work and that we didn't want Ron Killings, we wanted R-Truth, the comedy guy, that's just a bad take. We've got some people out here trying to steal my thunder, predicting that, oh, we told you that Jay was going to be a short champion. Well, that's just a bad take. Because We Too Deep said that before Jay ever won the title. We Too Deep said that when he won Royal Rumble. We Too Deep said, jump off the train January the 31st. The day before Royal Rumble, I said jump off the Jey Uso train because if he won the title, it was going to be a short and awful title run, and We Too Deep was correct. And people are going to be out here saying, oh, we called – no, We Too Deep called this first. We Too Deep was one of the very few podcasters out here that I know of that was saying don't – cheer for Jey Uso. We want Gunther to remain champion. And everyone was like, no, man, Jey Uso, man, we're going to get that moment. And I was like, well, you're going to get the moment, but that's all you're going to get. And I want you to look back on the 51-day reign of Jey Uso. Did you get anything other than the moment at WrestleMania? No. You got a really poor title run. That's all you got. Next take. That calling Punk a hypocrite is crazy. We should allow Punk to change his mind. That's a bad take. I'm all for if CM Punk wants to use the excuse that I have a job to do, so I'm going to go to Saudi. That's fine. But I know Phil Brooks, not on a personal level, but he wears his heart on his sleeve. When he says opinions, he typically stays with them and he stands on business. And he made moral statements about the Saudi stuff, right? He made this a moral issue by calling it blood money and saying everyone who goes sells out. And so I will reserve him the ability of saying, well, it's my job. I have a job to do. But Phil, that means you sold out because old Phil Brooks wouldn't sell out to this. Now, I personally still don't believe CM Punk's going to Saudi. I'm going to be completely honest with you, and I don't try to get political. I don't think nobody going to Saudi. With what has been happening since Sunday in the Middle East, really since Friday, we're on the brink of nuclear war between Israel and Iran right now. I have zero faith that anyone's actually going to Saudi. And if I'm a wrestler, I don't care how you feel on the issue. I'm not getting on a plane to go to Saudi to get stuck in the Middle East in the middle of a war. I'm just saying. Punk's still a hypocrite, right? Punk is either one of two things. He's either a hypocrite or he's a phony fraudster who doesn't actually believe what he says he believes. Right? This isn't just, oh, he changed his mind. No, he's either fake or he's a hypocrite. Because he's not going to stand on business. Right? That's where I'm at with that take. Next take is, we discussed on the show, I believe, last Tuesday. It may have been Friday. I don't remember. I think it was Tuesday. Discussed the idea that TKO may be trying to lower Roman Reigns' salary. And my opinion was good. He's not on the screen enough. That doesn't mean he's not valuable. But, right, I heard a take this past week that Roman Reigns deserves more money, which might be the worst take on this list. This might be the absolute worst take on this list. There's no defending this. Why does Roman Reigns deserve more money than what he's making right now? He's the highest paid wrestler in the history of the business, and he works like 20 dates a year. Now, I think Roman Reigns has some value to him as a surprise sort of special attraction. But I also don't think that he should be making $20-plus million dollars per year to be a special attraction. Because WWE has proven that it could live without Roman Reigns. And I would say this about anyone, Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk. No one deserves $20 million to show up 20 nights a week, or excuse me, 20 nights a year. And not really, like, he's not really selling merch. There are better merch sellers than him. I don't really know if he's still drawing tickets. I think Jay's a better ticket draw. I think Cody's a better ticket draw. And they go full time. I don't see how you could say that Roman deserves more money. That's an awful take. In the last take that I heard was the prediction that Jade Cargill was going to face Chelsea Green in the Queen of the Ring finals. Which was easily disproven as a bad take. Later that night that it was posted, when Chelsea Green gets removed from the tournament and replaced by Alba Fire, and Alexa Bliss wins the match. But let's say Chelsea was going to be in the tournament and she actually was in the tournament. Saying that she would have gotten by Charlotte or Alexa, and then the next week getting by Asuka. Chelsea Green, Queen of the Underground, Queen of the Undercard, was going to go to the finals against Jade. Like, I could see Jade. I still don't think Jade Cargill makes it. I think we're getting pretty simple. We're getting Roxanne, and we're getting Io in the finals, and Asuka. Roxanne and Asuka, in my opinion, will be the finals. And I do think that Asuka is going to win. I could see Jade from a storyline perspective, where Jade wins Queen of the Ring, gets her title spot at SummerSlam, and maybe Naomi cashes in, makes it a triple threat, and wins the title, ruining Jade's opportunity. I could see that from a title story perspective, seeing Jade in the finals. But Chelsea Green in the finals is absolutely crazy to me. Absolutely insane. But that's all I got for y'all tonight. This has been another episode of the Slapping Mead Wrestling Podcast. My name is We Too Deep. This has been episode 293. We're so close to 300 episodes. If you enjoyed this episode, like, share, and subscribe. Share it with your wrestling friends. If you want cool merchandise like this mug that I have, it's on slapandmeadwrestling.com. Use our affiliate links with Expedia as well as the WWE shop. Those affiliate links are also in the description. Oh, don't forget to check out Thursday night, the Beyond the Junkyard podcast with James and Cody as they break down AEW and some more topics on a week-to-week basis. James also does an episode on Saturday. Join the Discord, join the conversation. We'd love to have you. But until then, until Friday, you have a great rest of your week, and I will see you on Friday. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.